Have you ever been afraid to say what you're really thinking? I mean, some of you are like, no, and it's gotten me in a lot of trouble over the years. Some of you are like, yeah, I'm often guilty of not being willing to say what's on my mind. But have you ever been afraid to say what you're really thinking? Maybe with your boss, sometimes with a friend, or maybe even your spouse. I mean, we've all had those moments where we wanted to be honest. We wanted to say what's on our mind, but we weren't really certain how our words, how our honesty might be received or perceived by the other person. So instead of speaking up, you held it in. Maybe you just smiled politely. Maybe you just nodded in agreement. But deep down, you wondered, if I really said what I felt in this moment, would they still accept me? Would they still like me? Would they still love me? The truth is, some of us feel that way with God. We carry things in our life. We all have various pain points. We carry anger, we carry confusion, we carry frustrations and disappointments that lead us to having some questions. Questions for God. But somewhere along the way, we learn, well, don't say that out loud. Don't question God. Just smile and nod and just keep the faith. But what if we've misunderstood something about the heart of God? What if bringing real questions to a real God isn't a lack of faith, but it's really an act of faith? Those questions that we all have undoubtedly had in our life that maybe we've been afraid or hesitant to ask God or to say out loud, they come from different experiences. They come from honest places. They come for difficult reasons in our lives. You lost someone that you loved. You watched someone suffer. You got the diagnosis. You begged God for healing, and the healing didn't come. You were betrayed, left all alone. You were treated by someone that you should have been able to trust in a horrific manner. In that moment, or let's be honest, in that season of life, you sat in silence. And somewhere in your spirit, you began to have this question, whether you spoke it out loud or didn't. But the question is simply this: God, are you even listening? Are you even listening? And so today, this morning, if you've ever felt confused, angry, disappointed, disillusioned with God, that God, I've got good news for you. You're not alone. And let me say something else that I hope will encourage you. You're not less faithful. Even if we've been taught that faith means never doubting, never raising our voice toward heaven. See, this series, Can I Ask That?, is for people like you and me who love God, all right? This is a series for people who love God, but sometimes wonder, what in the world is he doing? What in the world is he doing? It's the why, what, the how questions that we all have from time to time in different moments and different seasons of our faith journey. But we got to start with this basic question. This is what we're gonna ask and hopefully answer today. Is it safe to question God? Is it safe? And what I want us to do, and this is where we're going to be for this whole series, we're going to be in the book of Psalms. So I want you to turn to Psalm number 13. This is where we're going to find some answers during this series, is through the Psalms. But before we look at Psalm 13, and if you don't have a Bible, the verses will be up on the screen. If you need a Bible, on the table out in the lobby, there's copies of Scripture. Grab one. We want you to have your own copy of the Scriptures. But before we look at Psalm 13 specifically, let's talk just for a minute, because I think this is important, about what the Psalms are. Especially if you've never read the Psalms before, or if you just thought that the Bible is just a rule book, or it's a collection of history or something else altogether. A couple of things that I want you to understand about the Psalms. The Psalms, the book of Psalms, are not a list of commands. The Psalms are not a timeline of events. And primarily, they're not a theological textbook, though there is rich theology inside of the Psalms. To put it very simply, when you read the Psalms, this is what you need to think about immediately every time you open up the Psalms. The Psalms are songs and poems. The Psalms are songs and poems, but stick with me what I'm about to say. Written by real people. Real human beings wrote these psalms, these songs and poems. And as you read the Psalms, you'll see that they are real people processing real life with God. The ups and the downs. The Psalms cover the whole gambit of the human experience. Inside the Psalms, you'll see joy. You'll hear words of gratitude. You'll read words of celebration. But you'll also read about grief and anger, depression, doubt, confession, longing. You'll even read some of the ugly stuff like jealousy and despair and even revenge. Tim Mackey of the Bible Project describes the Psalms this way, and I think this is good for us to remember. The Psalms functioned like ancient Israel's prayer book. They're a kind of literary temple inviting us into the presence of God, not with perfectly polished prayers, but with honest, emotional, vulnerable expression. And that is what makes the Psalms so important in my mind to our faith journey. The Psalms don't teach us about prayer, they teach us how to pray. They model for us what it looks like to take whatever you're feeling, whatever you're experiencing, and bring those thoughts and feelings directly to God. And so when you read the Psalms, as we're looking at different Psalms in this series, don't read them like an instruction manual. Read them like you're being invited to open up somebody's personal journal. Because that's what you're doing. Read them like you're overhearing somebody else's prayer. And by that, you're learning to shape your own prayers. At the same time, even though people wrote these words, we can't forget that these words are inspired by God, which means that God himself chose to preserve their raw honesty in his word. And again, we can take encouragement. We can hopefully find comfort in that. That as you read the Psalms with all of the raw honesty from these words, that God's like, I want them there. I've inspired them to be inside of the whole context of my word. Why? Because God is not only okay with questions, but he provides us a language for them. And the language for our questions, I think we can see time and time again throughout the book of Psalms. So as we're in Psalm 13, I want us to keep that in mind. Because you're about to read the words of somebody who loved God deeply. But in this season, in this moment of their life, they didn't understand what God was doing. Can anybody relate? This is a psalm of David. David was not an atheist. He was not a cynic. He was known to be a man after God's own heart. And here he is in Psalm 13 having this unfiltered, raw conversation with God. It's a very short psalm, but we're going to walk through it slowly. David opens this psalm with these words. How long, O Lord, Will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? This is not simply a quiet time journal entry. This is coming from a soul that's unraveling, that's struggling, that's not sure what's going on. David, as you see, repeats this phrase, how long, how long, how long, how long, four times, and that's not by accident. He's pacing himself. He's pleading with God. I can imagine that he's writing, he's exhausted, he's tired. And so he's not trying to clean up his theology. He doesn't polish his words. He's simply pouring out his soul. Have you ever been there? Have you ever done what David does in this psalm? Because maybe you felt forgotten by God. You felt overlooked by God. Felt like your prayers were going nowhere. See, this isn't a picture of weak faith. If somebody says that this is a moment of weakness, it's not. What this is a picture of is this is a picture of lament. This is what lamenting looks and sounds like. As a matter of fact, if you were to read through the Psalms, about a third of the Psalms that are written are called laments. Basically, a lament is when somebody says, God, I don't get this, and I'm gonna tell you about it. That's what a lament is. God, there's something going on. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And so I'm laying at your feet. I am lamenting. I have this heaviness inside of me, and I'm bringing it to you. And the Psalms are filled with them. Let me just read a few of them. Psalm 10, verse 1. Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Psalm 44. Awake, wake up, Lord. Why do you sleep? Rouse yourself. Get up. Do not reject us forever. Why do you hide your face and forget our misery and oppression? Psalm 42, I say to my rock. Again, there's this contrast. I say to my rock, have you forgotten me? Why must I go about mourning, oppressed by the enemy? Psalm 74, O God, why have you rejected us forever? Why does your anger smolder against the sheep of your pasture? Psalm 88, why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? Again, throughout the Psalms, you'll see these kind of laments, these kinds of expressions, and that's exactly what David is doing here. He's being honest. God, this is the real me, and this is how I feel, and this is what I need you to hear me say. And he continues pleading in verse 3. He says, consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him. Lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken. What's he saying here? How I would say it. God, if you don't show up, I'm not going to make it. If you don't show up, God, I am not going to make it. But look closely at David's language. This is more than just desperation. This is prayer that's rooted in something that we all need. It's rooted in a relationship. Look at it again. David calls out. He says, O Lord, my God. In David's mind, he's not crying out to some unknown, distant deity. He is calling on his God, the one who has walked with him through valleys before. There's intimacy in his request, O Lord my God, even though there's a sense of urgency in his pain. And he says, light up my eyes. It's a poetic way of saying, God, give me life again. Give me life again. Restore my vision. Help me to see, not just physically, but more importantly, help me to see spiritually what's going on. David doesn't ask for escape. What is he asking for? He's asking for perspective. He's asking for perspective. He knows that unless God somehow breathes hope back into him, that then spiritually he's done. But then did you see the deeper ache in David's heart? Look at it again, verse 3 and 4. He says, lest my enemies say, I have prevailed over him. See, for David, it's not just about him and his survival. David feels, for whatever reason, the weight of God's reputation. Now, again, God's reputation does not rise and fall on a man's shoulder, but David in this moment feels like the weight of God's reputation is on him. God, if I fall, they'll say, you failed. Again, this prayer is filled with anguish and allegiance. Keep that in mind. There's anguish, but there's also allegiance. And so often, in our suffering, our prayers sound similar to this, or maybe they sound just like this. God, I can't see what you're doing right now in my family. God, I can't see what you're doing right now in my health. God, I can't see what you're doing in my finances. God, I don't know how much longer I can take, fill in the blank. I don't know how much longer I can take this. God, if you don't do something, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to survive. And again, right now, this is where David is. He is right on the edge. This psalm is the cry of someone who's shaken, for sure, but he's not shattered, as we'll find out as we continue to read. And one of the reasons why we know that he's not shattered is because of what this psalm is. He's actually talking to God. He is expressing himself to his God. And that in and of itself is an act of faith. So again, thinking about your life, if in the midst of whatever you're dealing with, you're still talking to God about it, that's great. That's faith. That's good. Verse 5, David says this. He says, but I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. Wait, whoa. If I could screech the brakes right there, record scratch, whatever, I would do it because that's a hard turn. Verse 4 to verse 5, that's a hard turn. And this is where I need us to sit for a minute. Again, we said that the Psalms are written by real people processing real life with a real God. And so I can't imagine that this psalm came out of David's heart in a single breath, in a single setting. Again, remember, the Psalms are poems. They're songs. And if that's the case, they were written like any honest piece of art, right? Over time, with reflection, not in a rush. David goes from, how long will you forget me? Give light before I sleep in death, to this. But I trust in your steadfast love. Again, that's not just a lyrical shift. That's a whole heart shift. And I can't help but wonder. And this is, again, I can't say this for sure because I'm not David. I didn't write the psalm. I'm just trying to put myself into his humanity for a minute. But I can't help but sit and think and meditate on this idea of what happened between verse 4 and 5. What happened? Not in David's circumstances, because we don't read God showed up. We don't read suddenly that the enemy was defeated. There's no miracle between verse 4 and verse 5. No angelic visit. No change in David's circumstances. So what is it? What changed? Again, I don't know. So this is me just trying to process through a human lens how perhaps another human was processing their own pain. So here's what I want to suggest. We don't know for sure, but maybe, just maybe, it was T-I-M-E. Time. Not too much time. Not too little time. But just enough time. Just enough time for David to maybe catch his breath. Maybe just enough time for David to empty his eyes with all of the tears that were welled up inside of him. Maybe it was just enough time for him to remember. To remember. And again, I don't know this, but maybe I can just imagine David sitting down with his journal and his scroll in his hand, staring at that last sentence. Last part of verse 4, my foes rejoice because I'm shaken. And maybe he just sat in silence for a minute. Maybe it was for a few hours. Maybe he put down his pen, got up, took a walk. But as he was walking, I just wonder if maybe he started to think, and he began to replay some memories in his mind. And those memories weren't all of the pain that he was presently experiencing, but those memories, those thoughts began to go to the faithfulness of God in his life. Maybe he was recalling the day that Samuel anointed him to be king, or the day that he killed a bear protecting the sheep. Maybe he rehearsed in his mind the moment that Goliath fell. Maybe he remembered the nearness of God when he was in the caves running away from Saul. Maybe he just took the time to remember all of the times that God rescued him. And maybe, just maybe, he remembered himself at some point after some time. He's been good. He's been good to me. He's been good to me. And maybe, I don't know this, but maybe that's what turns the psalm. Maybe that's what shifts in his heart. Because again, David's pain didn't magically disappear. His questions weren't answered. His enemies weren't defeated. But he remembered. And remembering gave him the strength to trust. It gave him the strength to trust. He said, but I will trust. I will sing the fact that he has been good. He didn't trust because God made everything better. He didn't trust because I feel better. He didn't trust because it all makes sense now. He trusted because he realized and he remembered God has been good. And that was enough for him to hold on to. That's what got him to verse 5. And this morning as we start this series, can I ask that? Maybe that's what you need when you find yourself looking to heaven, wondering, why, God? What are you doing, God? How am I supposed to feel about this, God? And maybe your step, maybe your breakthrough, maybe your, you know, the transformation that needs to happen in your heart isn't going to come from a changed circumstance or a fixed situation. Maybe your breakthrough, maybe your moment will come when you can remember some truth. Remember what is true. What did David remember? What did he choose to put his trust in? Let's look back at it. He says, but I have trusted in your steadfast love. That phrase, steadfast love, comes from a Hebrew word that we've taught about here at Zion, but let me teach it again. It's the word hesed. Hesed. And if you've never heard that word before, it's one of the most important words in the entire Old Testament. That word, hesed, is hard to translate into English with just one word. That's why you'll see the Hebrew word hesed translated the faithfulness, steadfast love, loving kindness. It's translated in English different ways, but it all comes from this Hebrew word hesed, and that's the word that David is using here, and the English translators chose to use steadfast love. But it's more than just love. Hesed is more than just love. Hesed is more than just kindness. It's more than just mercy. It's all of those things, but it's actually way more than any of those things. Bible scholar Michael Card describes hesed this way. He said, it's when the person from whom I have the right to expect nothing gives me everything. The person from whom I have the right to expect nothing gives me everything. And he describes it as a kind of love that is, and he uses three words, covenantal. It means it doesn't change. Hesed doesn't change with moods or mistakes. It is relentless. It sticks with you when you've failed, when you've wandered, and even when you've doubted. And it's active. It shows up. It pursues. Hesed does something. I've heard hesed defined this way, that hesed is God's loyal, faithful, never giving up love. And when we look at that psalm, that's exactly what David is remembering. I trusted in, I remembered your steadfast love. He didn't suddenly feel better. His enemies weren't gone. His circumstances didn't change, but he remembered hesed, God's loyal, faithful, never ending love. So in the middle of his questions, after some time, in my mind, I see time between verse 4 and 5. He chose, there's the word, he chose, let me say it again, he chose to anchor his soul, not in his feelings, not in his circumstances, but in God's unshakable, loyal love. And that same hesed that David held on to, God has for you in the middle of whatever it is that you're experiencing in your life. Hesed is not a love that says, come back to me when you're stronger. Hesed is a love that says, I see you in the darkness and I'm not going anywhere. And some of you need to hear that, because you're in the middle of some darkness right now. So when your mind is racing, when your heart is breaking, when your prayers feel empty, remember hesed, God's steadfast love. That's what David held on to, and that's what you can hold on to. So this series, as we started, here's kind of one of the big questions that I want us to keep thinking about is this. What if faith is not the absence of questions, but the willingness to wrestle until you remember what's true? What if that's a big part of what faith is all about? It's not the absence of questions. We know that. We've all lived long enough to know that faith can't be the absence of questions, because if it's the absence of questions, then none of us have any faith. Period. End of story. Let's all go and have lunch. Right? The whole faith journey that we're on is mixed with confidence and curiosity and questions and doubt. But again, what if part of our faith journey is not about the absence of questions, but the willingness to wrestle until you remember? So this morning, if you're stuck in verses 1 through 4 right now, I want to tell you something that's important. It's okay. It's okay. If you would describe where you're at in this moment, is I'm in the how long, how long, how long, how long. That's okay. I'm even going to give you some permission Don't rush past this phase. Don't rush past this moment. Be willing to sit in it for some time if you need it. Because I don't want you to, God doesn't want you to, and you can't do it anyway. Fake verse 5. You can't fake, but I have trusted in your steadfast love. You can't fake it. So don't. But if I can love you, pastor you, shepherd you enough in this season that you may find yourself in, the verse 1 through 4 season, when you sit in silence, when life gets quiet around you, and all you seem to be able to do is rehearse the pain, rehearse the pain, rehearse the pain, rehearse the pain. Recognize what you're doing. You're in verse 1 through 4. And by God's grace, for his glory, your gain, ask God to help you to get to, if you're not there yet, verse 5. So that no longer do you find yourself in the quietness of your life rehearsing the pain. But when those quiet moments come, when you're able to sit in silence, it's not that I'm rehearsing the pain. I'm now able to remember his presence. I'm able to remember his chesed. That's when verse 5 shows up. That's when you'll move to verse 5. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. I want everyone to be there. You want to be there. God wants you to be there. But if you're not, be honest about it. And then do what needs to be done to move through this psalm. How do you do it? Let me give you three things. Number one, we'll put them all up on the screen together. Number one, bring your full self to God. That seems simple, but it's true. If you're mad, say it. God knows it. If you're confused, say it. If you're grieving, say it. Pour it out. He can handle the real you. Why? Because he knows the real you. So bring your full self to God. And then let the psalm shape your prayers. Again, during this month, we'll be doing this for the next 4 weeks. Let the psalms be a part of your devotional time. Challenge yourself to read through the psalms over the next 30 days. But read them as they are. They're poems and songs written by real people who are processing real life with a real God. Let the Psalms then shape your prayers. And then practice. Spiritual formation, being shaped into the image of Christ, is about practicing. So when your current pain screams, practice remembering what God has done. And if you need to, make a list so that when that pain begins to scream at you, when those questions continue to come, and they will, and it's okay, you still can go back to, but I have this list. I can remind myself of the things that God has done. God, you were faithful here and here and here and here. And let that be the anchor. So, back to the original question. Is it safe to question God? The answer is absolutely. Absolutely. Not only is it safe, it's biblical. It's human. It's faithful. Again, read through the Psalms. They don't hide questions, they highlight them. That's why they're here. God's not trying to hide questions. He's saying, look at all these questions that people ask me. I'm going to just put them all in one big prayer book, one big song book. Here. He doesn't condemn them, he invites them. That's why they're there. So again, let me encourage you. Questioning God isn't a sign that your faith is breaking. It might be the very way your faith is growing. But remember, David questioned God, but he also trusted him. He brought his pain to God, not away from God. And listen, that's the key. That's the secret sauce. The danger isn't questioning God. The danger is not bringing your questions to him. So again, as a pastor, as a friend, as a fellow questioner, yes, it is safe to question God. Why? Because when you bring real questions to the real God, he meets you with real grace. I didn't say that he's going to give you the answers. He's going to give you something better. He's going to give you chesed. He's going to give you the steadfast love that chases after us, that doesn't run away from us, that pursues us. He's going to give us himself. Imagine being a church that doesn't shame people for asking hard questions. That's who I want us to be. I want us to be that kind of church. I want us to be the kind of church that doubts don't isolate, but they invite deeper trust. That's what we're building here. And that's what I hope, no matter who you are, where you're at on your faith journey, I hope that's what you feel here, that this is a safe place to struggle. I want us to be a safe place to struggle, but I also want us to be a place where no one struggles alone. And that takes all of us to be that kind of church, where we're not afraid by our neighbor's struggles. We don't flinch when somebody says, I've got some serious doubts going on right now. That we say, okay, let's sit in this. Let's walk together in this. And it might take some time. You might be in verses 1-4 right now, but I'm with you and I'm for you. I'm not going anywhere until we get to verse 5 and 6 together. Until we get there together. So as the worship team comes, here's the question that I want to challenge you with. What am I afraid to say to God right now? Just think about that. What am I afraid to say to God right now? What's the fear? What's the anger that you're afraid to express to him? What's the grief that you're afraid to express to him? What's the doubt that you're afraid to express to him? Name it. Name it. And then bring it. Bring the question to God. He's big enough. He's not going to wring his hands. He's not going to wag his finger. He's going to say, come, let me show you my chesed, my steadfast, never changing, faithful love that I have for you. It's not too much. Why? Because the God who carried David's cries is ready to carry yours too. Let me ask you to bow your heads. Let me give a little bit of instruction. When we begin to sing, those who are going to get baptized, you can go and get ready for that. But I want to be in this moment right now. I don't want to jump ahead. In this moment in time, I've prayed and believed that God is spirit and his word is going to and is ministering to hearts, because there's a lot of people who are still living in, they're in the 1 verses 1-4 season. And I love you and I care about you and I want this church to be a place that walks with you. And my challenge to all of us is, as we move into a time of response, to do just that, to respond. If you're here today and you need to name something to God, bring it. What do I mean by bring it? At Zion, we always leave space for God to move. We invite people to pray alone, pray with a friend, pray in your seat, come and kneel and pray at this, at the steps here as a declaration of I'm just pouring my heart out to God. But if you're here today and you need prayer, some of our discipleship group leaders, they're going to just come down and hang out in the front, and they're going to be willing to pray for you. And if you just need somebody to pray for you, if you'll just come and just kneel, we'll have people who will just, they'll pray over you, pray for you. And we would love the opportunity to walk with you. Today is a day of communion where we remember Christ's sacrifice. Funny thing is, Jesus on the cross said, my God, why have you foraken me? There was a moment in Jesus' life that he was in verse 1 through 4. He didn't understand. He knew he was where he needed to be, but in his humanity, he felt forsaken. We remember Christ's sacrifice regularly at Zion because we're forgetful people. And so if you're here today and you're a Christian, you're a follower of Jesus, we invite you to come and take the elements. Again, I'm tons of guests here today, and if you're a believer, please participate with us. But what we would ask you to do is just come and just take the element and then just go back to your seat, and then I'll lead us through the elements after this song. But if you need somebody to pray for you, please just come and kneel and we'll have somebody to pray. We also have devotionals here for this series you can grab when you take your communion elements. But let's be mindful of what God may be wanting to do in everybody's lives today. If you're not a Christian, you're not yet following Jesus, this was unapologetically, again, geared toward those who believe in God, who put their faith in Jesus, but have doubts. They have questions. And so if you're here today and you would describe yourself as a not yet follower of Jesus, don't know if I believe in Jesus, whatever the story might be in your journey, we respect that. And we want to be a help to you in that. So if you have questions, you want to get together, you want to have a conversation, let's do it, because we want to help you wrestle through the reality of who Jesus is and who he wants to be in your life. So let me pray, and then we'll respond. Father, we love you. We thank you for this day. We thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your grace. God, move in our hearts and do what only you can do in these moments. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. We invite you to stand, respond, come, kneel, pray, ask somebody to pray with you, pray for you. If I can pray for you, I'll just be down here front, down front as well. Jacob will come down front as well, one of our elders. We'd love the opportunity to pray.